But I want to talk about Toronto FC, because as I said, I think we can agree that it's been a pretty, it's been a pretty stable franchise since Tim Lewicki was here, and with Tim Bezbachenko and Greg Vanney. And of course there's the title. And how concerned should TFC fans be that we're about to embark now on a, you know, some sort of walk in the wilderness, because the hiring of Chris Armas does seem to have been a mistake.
I think it's somewhat concerning. You know, I don't know if, you know, people should be concerned to the point where we're going back to the early days of TFC, where, you know, this was a laughing stock of a franchise, and, you know, it was very much a dysfunctional organization. I think there are good people in place, and there's a lot of intellectual capital that the club has with, you know, Bill Manning as club president at the helm. But I don't think there's any question, Jeff, that, you know, some hard questions have to be asked of Manning and Ali Curtis, the GM, about this hiring. I mean, you know, it's easy to in hindsight to criticize the, you know, the selection of Chris Armas, you know, after the fact. But, you know, what really sort of troubles me about all of this is, you know, the change in tactics that Chris wanted to impart, going from, you know, a more direct, vertical, and high-pressing style compared to the more deliberate, methodical, and possession-based brand of football that they played under Greg Vanney. And to do it with essentially the same sort of team that was in place last year without making any major off-season additions to help put Armas in a better sort of position to help him, you know, realize his tactical vision for the club. I think, you know, that's a serious sort of shortfalling, and that, I think that falls mostly on Armas and Bill Manning for not, as I said, setting him up for success. So, yeah, I mean, I think there should be some sort of, I don't know if fear is the right word, but concerns as to whether, you know, Ali Curtis and Bill Manning are the people who should be trusted to, you know, set things right, just in terms of, you know, not just how they handled, you know, the Armas hiring, but also, you know, essentially signing off on the changes, the pretty big changes that Chris wanted to do without giving him the proper tools to get success. So, yeah, I think there's every reason to be concerned. I don't know if it's to the point where people should be fearful about returning to the old days just yet. I don't think it's at that point.
What is Toronto FC right now? You look at this team. Now, obviously, they're 1-8-2. The record is what the record is, and we are led to believe that they will be playing home games. There's certainly that does appear to be on the table at some point this summer. But what is tactically, in terms of personnel, what is this team right now, John? And what type of coach does it need?
I think it's a team, you know, very much that is still in the Vanney mold. Of playing, as I just said earlier, about playing that sort of deliberate, methodical possession brand of soccer. It's, you know, there are certainly young players that they haven't called upon nearly enough. And so I think that's one of the things that I think whoever is brought in as a new coach, I mean, if I'm a TFC fan, I'd like to see, you know, guys like Ralph Prezo and Jaden Nelson, Shaquille Rudy, you know, teenagers still, get a lot more playing time just to see them, how they are, you know, further embedded into the starting lineup. But, you know, aside from that, it is an aging core. It is an old team. I mean, Michael Bradley, God bless him, wonderful athlete, but he's the wrong side of 30. And, you know, he still, I think, has plenty of legs left in him. But, you know, the pieces around him, you know, when you look at Omar Gonzalez and Chris Mavinga, it is an aging core. And so I think there has to be some sort of thought given to getting a bit younger, getting a bit quicker. You know, and they really have to decide what they want to be. If they want to sort of continue with this sort of pressing style that Armas preached, which I think is a mistake, but if that's not what they want to do, then they got to go out and get guys who can play that. I mean, I suspect that whoever takes over from Armas, whether it's the interim coach or the full-time coach, they're going to scale that back, and I think they just have to, you know, the immediate focus is getting some points on the board. and really sort of settling things down and then laying a foundation for something to build upon, because they can't continue on, obviously, as they have been.
Now, I understand that stuff doesn't necessarily happen in a vacuum, but I'm going to taking a step back a bit. I'm wondering if, and this is horrible. I'm going to apologize in advance because it really is horrible, horrible hindsight. The hindsight police should come in here and arrest me and put me in handcuffs and take me away for what I'm going to say. But this is a team that hasn't been home for a long time because of the pandemic. Would it have not made sense to do some of the heavy lifting, some of the overhauling while the team was out of Toronto? You know, what I'm getting at is, okay, so you're back here in the summer. You're going to come in with a team that is going to be life and death to make the playoffs. Look, fans are going to come out because we're all pining for sports. We're all going to go to games, and we'll probably be willing to put up with a certain amount of lousy play, at least initially. But do you think maybe TFC should have punted on this thing? And by punting, I'm talking about moving out some of those older players earlier and just taking advantage of the fact that they were not going to be at home, so that when they did come home, they'd have a product that was ready to go again.
I think that's an excellent point, Jeff. I think, playing down in Florida, they've kind of been out of sight, out of mind a little bit. And so I think with everything that they've had to deal with because of travel restrictions, having to be, based out of there, I don't want to say given somewhat of a pass, but I do think there is a certain level of forgiveness about, everything they've had to deal with. And so for me, it would have been that would have been the moment to not necessarily overhaul the roster, but certainly move some aging bodies out and to retool a little bit. Now, they're coming home. No doubt, as you said, I think fans are going to be eager to go out the game just because they've been denied that opportunity for so long. But it does, I think it was a bit of a missed opportunity. I think had they made, those changes and coming home now, I think it would have certainly earned a little bit of the trust of the fan base a little bit more. Whereas now, they're very much having to sort of do some repairs on the fly. And, it's asking fans to be even more patient with, a team that, as I said, has got it horribly wrong this year. So I do wonder how, fans are going to respond to this, fledgling sort of team that's really struggled for results, coming home right now.
Reading between the lines, I get the sense that Toronto FC seems pretty confident that they will get approval from the federal government of home games here. And I know, obviously, a team dear to your heart, the Blue Jays, is following it with considerable interest as they kind of build their own case. But I'm wondering if the fact, John, that MLS has shown, I think, showed in its bubble in Orlando and has shown since then an ability to pull off a season without necessarily making a mess of their COVID-19 protocols. In point of fact, I think they've done a pretty good job by and large, considering they've had some players that have had to go away for international duty. Do you think that would be a selling point with the feds, essentially? Look, we've done this. Like, we've managed COVID. We've done a pretty good job of regulating ourselves. Do you think that might be a selling point with the feds? Trust us, in other words?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it certainly doesn't sort of hurt, MLS's and MLS's case for having Toronto FC return home and the other two Canadian franchises as well, for that matter. I mean, we shouldn't sort of overlook the fact that, much like TFC, CF Montreal and the Whitecaps, Vancouver Whitecaps, have had to play abroad this entire year as well. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that sort of will play in, a small role in the sort of discussions and the argument and the sort of case that MLS has to lay out with the federal government in terms of, look, we know what we're doing. How much of a role? I mean, I don't know. I mean, who knows, really? But I do think it, to some extent, it would probably, it certainly bolsters, TFC's case.
I want to move on to the Euro. The semifinals are set. I think like a lot of people, as a neutral, I've decided to hitch my wagon to Denmark. I know I'm a horrible sucker. I'm a sucker for the narrative there. I have a pretty good sense of who you would like to see win this. And I, frankly, I have to say of the remaining teams, they are the team that has probably impressed me the most. So I will ask you how you would handicap these two semifinals.
Well, I think they're both great matchups for one. I mean, you're talking about, for me, the four best teams and the four most consistent teams at this tournament, you know, who have reached the Final Four. I also don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, four teams who played all of their group stage games at home are still standing. And, you know, the fact that England, on top of that, they played their round of 16 game at Wembley Stadium and they're set to play, you know, the semifinal, and they get through to the final, they're going to have home field advantage too. So I do think, you know, the home field advantage has certainly played a part. But, yeah, I mean, two great matchups. I mean, when you look at Denmark, obviously the Christian Eriksen narrative is out there, and that's kind of the predominant story. But I think it's more than emotion and more than just that feel-good story that's really fueling this Danish side. I mean, they're a wonderfully talented team. I mean, when you look at players, you know, the caliber of Joachim Mayle and Simon Kjær, who I know, you know, pretty well because they play in Italy, and, you know, Josef Poulsen and Kasper Dolberg up front. I mean, there's some skill and talent there. England, you know, obviously Raheem Sterling and then Harry Kane have come good, but, you know, they haven't conceded yet. they have a very strong, you know, defensive backbone to them, and I think that's, for me, has just been what's really impressive about them, is just they seem to have maintained their defensive shape and organization, playing against, you know, some four or five very different opponents. You know, the Spaniards, there was a lot of questions coming into the tournament about their ability to put it all together. And, you know, questions about Alvaro Morata, because he's on his day, he can be a very lethal striker, but he's also incredibly wasteful at times. But they found a way to overwhelm opponents and grind out results, and I think that puts them in good stead, you know, going into the semifinal tomorrow. You know, and as for Italy, you know, I think, you know, on the balance of play, they've probably been the most balanced and most consistent team at this tournament. Obviously wonderful in defense and just, you know, being able to really frustrate opposing strikers and really negate, you know, opposing teams' main goal scoring threats like they did with Romelu Lukaku in the quarterfinals. But this is not the Italy that I think most people are familiar with. This is an Italian side who plays a very dynamic and open and attacking brand of football. And, you know, full credit to Roberto Mancini. I mean, when he inherited this Italian team 3 years ago, it was coming off, you know, that failure to qualify for the 2018 World Cup, and he really remade the team very much in his mold. I mean, when you look at the type of player he was, it was a very adventurous and, you know, go for it type of player. And I think that's what he's imparted and instilled in this Italian national team, that sense of fearlessness, that sense of, you know, let's go after this. We don't have to sort of, you know, sit back and soak up pressure and then hit people on the counter. And he's got a perfect mix of, you know, veteran players, but also he's shown a lot of faith and a lot of sort of belief in young players. And I think that has served Italy well. So for me, I think, you know, just two fantastic semifinals. And I think both games are going to be really interesting tactical battles.